Hello and welcome to the Conversion Choreography Show. I'm Anna Iverson, a former figure skater and corporate refugee turned direct response copywriter who helps you create high converting marketing campaigns that turn lukewarm leads into obsessed mega fans. Join me as I walk you through the latest marketing strategies and persuasion techniques to help you make more sales and more impact in your online business. Ready to get started? Then let's dive in with the show. Hey, Anna here. Welcome to the Conversion Choreography Show. So how many times have you read a piece of copy and wondered how on earth the writer managed to read your mind? It's like they have a camera pointing straight into the depths of your amygdala and they're speaking directly to you, your darkest fears and your unspoken desires. Then how many times have you tried to replicate that impact only to get stuck because you have no idea what to say to make that level of emotional connection with your buyers? So what if there was a way to shortcut the process of understanding what really drives your clients to buy and to gaining deep insight into the minds of your prospects without having to analyze every single one of them individually? The good news is today's guest has figured out exactly how to do just that. Jodie Robertson is a retired military pilot turned direct response copywriter who uses her own primal persuasion system to create high converting marketing funnels for ambitious entrepreneurs. So welcome to the show, Jodie. I'm super excited to dive in and find out more about your journey and your fascinating copywriting process.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here.
So you followed a really interesting path to where you are today. Can you tell us a bit about how you went from flying military planes to writing direct response copy?
Well, I mean, first of all, I've always loved to write. So I've been writing fiction for a long time, which is not copywriting, obviously, but, you know, I don't have any problem sitting down for hours at a time and writing. You know, it's good. I love it. So I started getting close to my time to get out of the military, and I realized I really didn't have a plan for what I was going to do when I grew up. So I kind of got online and started looking for something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I did the same thing when I had my children. So I can't go back to corporate. It's too hideous.
Yeah. And the thing about flying, now that you bring that up, is I don't want to say it's lazy. It's a lot of hard work, but you're doing something you love to do. So to start thinking about what are you going to do after that makes it really challenging.
Actually, my sister-in-law is a commercial pilot. So she flies of holiday flights. And I'm always amazed at the number of years and hours and the expense of training to become a pilot when you're a commercial pilot. And then from what she says to me, and I'm sure this isn't a true reflection of what she actually does, she said that she kind of twiddles a few knobs at takeoff and landing, and then the rest of the time she's just sitting there not doing an awful lot. So it kind of feels like a cushy job, which is probably quite hard to replace. But obviously that's my limited experience of what a pilot does. There's probably a lot more to it than she's making out.
Yeah, well, probably. But I mean, it's a good, fun job. You can't really complain about it. That's the thing. And so I was kind of looking at this, well, what am I going to do now? So I started getting online and looking, and I found these websites like Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income and a guy named Joel Runyon who ran Impossible HQ. And they started talking about how you can make money with a blog. And I thought, that's great. So I kind of got myself a domain name and I started using their guides through their affiliate links to create this blog. And it was just like this slippery slope where I started to learn about online marketing and copywriting in general. Copywriting really connected with me because I love to write already. And that's kind of where that jump from becoming a pilot to becoming a direct response copywriter came from.
That's really interesting, actually, because I started off my first venture into online business was also writing a blog. So I did what most mums who are kind of bored of playing toddler games do. They start a mum blog. And so I was writing this blog and learning social media marketing, learning SEO and all that kind of thing. And what I very quickly realized was that there is an awful lot of competition on these mum blogs to try and make money from either pay-per-click advertising, but you need millions and billions of hits on your website to make any money, or doing promotional content, but the big brands will pay mum bloggers £10 to promote like a microwave chicken product. And all of these mums will be jumping up and kind of raising their hands to take on these advertising opportunities. And I just thought, God, this is way too much work for that level of competition and that amount of money. It just didn't seem worth it to me. And I know some people do manage to go on and make it into a lucrative living, but I kind of started there and then thought there has got to be a better way to make a decent living from writing online. And did you know anything about direct response before you got into blogging and before you discovered Pat Flynn and Smart Passive Income?
Nothing. I knew nothing about this world at all.
It's amazing, is it, when you discover it, because it's like this whole amazing universe opens up in front of you and nobody in the real world understands what it is we do, which is kind of half the fun.
I've been doing it for years now and I still can't explain it.
So are there any experiences you can take from your time as a pilot in the military to help you write stronger sales copy?
I think that in general, from the military, you know, you're constantly, especially as an officer, you're constantly being mentored by leaders, you know, varying levels of leadership and leaders like anywhere, like in any business and organization, but there's certain ones that are highly persuasive. And when you look back at that, you can see how they just naturally persuade people. And, you know, after 20 years of seeing that, I think that I bring some of that with me. I'm not sure, you know, how to even quantify that. There's just a way about a leader and the persuasion that does translate to copy. And I think it just naturally comes out as you write.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure you over the course of 20 years, just by process of osmosis, you would have just absorbed all of that amazing persuasion ability, which is I'm kind of jealous about.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, I thought about this question too, bullet writing, which you would not expect. I think there's something that I take away from the military that is directly impacted my ability to write fascinations or bullets.
Yeah, that's interesting. Where's the connection come from?
As an officer, I had to write performance reports on the people that I was in charge of. And I also had to write awards packages trying to get them awards so they could get promoted. And that is really just a sheet of one-line bullets that goes to some type of board and people look over them. And you have maybe 20 bullets to convince this board to either promote someone or to win an award. So you get really good at putting as much impact as you can into those 20 bullets and trying to get your people their awards and their promotions.
So for people who are listening, Jodie is basically the bullet queen. We're both a member of a copywriting community, and Jodie basically kicks everyone's butt every time they do a bullet writing competition. And I think everybody's a bit scared to enter when Jodie throws her name into the ring. So all those years of writing all those reports, it's obviously served you well.
Yeah, I think it was a huge help in my ability to take something big, like what did you do all year long, and throw it into one highly impactful statement.
Yeah, and I guess the stakes would have been really high for the people whose lives and careers you were impacting. So the pressure was on.
Yeah, definitely.
So you previously ran other online businesses, as you mentioned. What was your biggest takeaway from your time as a blogger and as an entrepreneur selling your own products?
Yeah, I kind of became a professional. I called myself a professional shiny object chaser in the beginning because you're just trying to figure out everything, right?
Yeah.
And what I noticed and I think is valuable for everyone is I did a lot of things and I failed at a lot of things. And you should never really walk away from a failure going, I failed. And I think even as an instructor pilot, I tried to bring that forward as there's no such thing as a perfect flight, and we're going to go out and we're going to do some stuff and we're going to help each other out. And then we're going to land and talk about the things we did wrong, and that's going to make us stronger. So, you know, I went from this spending a week trying to learn to build a WordPress site for my first blog. And then I found out about these guys who were making niche websites. So I created my own niche websites, taking that piece that I learned from building WordPress blogs. And now then I'm trying to make content. So now I'm learning about copywriting and making good content. And then I realized I need to get people to that blog. So now I have to learn about SEO. And then I learned about people who are buying and selling websites. Well, that sounds really great, right? I don't have to build all this stuff anymore. I can just buy them. So I learned to negotiate website deals, and I learned to improve website copy. And I mean, it just kind of rolls into this talent stack you're creating.
I love that. Yeah, it sounds like we've been on such a similar journey. All of that stuff, all the memories are coming screaming back. I remember trying to watching YouTube videos and reading blogs about how to build a site on WordPress. And I remember my first ever WordPress site, I made the fatal error of signing up to WordPress.com instead of WordPress.org, and it cost me £250, and I had to like go through the hassle of getting my refund when I was like, oh no, I signed up to the wrong one.
I had a domain name on WordPress.org or whatever it was that I never got to use because I did the wrong thing.
So frustrating. But then like since then I've probably built maybe four more websites, and having been through that whole nightmare journey of knowing absolutely nothing about building a website to then go, right, I've done this loads of times now and you can pretty much chuck one together in a few hours, but the learning curve is huge. So it's funny, all of that just reminds me so much of everything that I did in the beginning as well. So you qualified as a ClickFunnels certified partner, which is a serious stamp of approval in the world of direct response marketing. What would you say are some of the key ingredients to a winning funnel that you learned from Russell Brunson?
Yeah, that program was pretty big thing in its time. It was kind of like getting the back end access to Russell's trainings. And I'm glad I did it. I really went in there wanting to improve my copy and understand how a funnel works more than ever, you know, building funnels for people. But there's a couple things that people overlook when it comes to their funnel. How important their backend offer is really one of the main things. And what I mean by backend offer, you know, you've got, for those who may not know, you've got your front end offer, your main thing you thought of selling, like say, I'm going to sell diet pills, right? And that's my front end offer. But then once you go to like the upsell would be your backend offer. And maybe you're selling, you know, videos on how to get six-pack abs or something, and that's your back-end offer. The real power is the money you make off that back-end offer. Russell talks about that front-end offer finances your advertising, and your ability to outspend your competition is what's going to make you succeed. Anything you really make extra is going to be on that upsell or back-end offer.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I think most people probably do miss out on that opportunity. They think that the thing that they're trying to sell is where their money's going to come from. And they maybe don't necessarily see that as a loss leader that is then going to translate into bigger purchases or repeat business further down the line. And actually, I've been working with a client who is kind of convinced that all of their sales need to come off a single webinar. And the idea for them of making offers on the back end and using email marketing is completely alien to them. It's almost taken a lot of education to say to them, you know, the long-term relationship that you build with these people is actually going to be where the real money is and how you're going to scale this thing. So that totally makes sense.
I mean, he even goes so far as saying, you know, that entire first product, you put all that money into advertising and then you rely on your ascension model after that, your lineup of products afterwards and your lifetime value of your customer to finance your business and to make your money.
So would you say that the best thing to do then if you were to take Russell's approach would be to start off with a low ticket offer that you're running your paid traffic to and then sort of stair step people up to a higher ticket offer? Or would you go in with the high ticket offer and then just sell them repeatedly the lower priced products in the back end?
I think it would depend on the product. It's really, you know, it depends on the business. I mean, if you've got he loves to start with free plus shipping offers, just a book that's free plus shipping, something like that, just to get that name that but he knows his numbers. And that's another thing, you know, startups and new business people don't understand is they don't have their numbers. Russell knows from the beginning how much it's going to cost to put that person in his funnel and how much he's going to make over their entire lifetime. The more data you have, the better.
And I think a lot of people as well, I think they're just scared of looking at the numbers. They're scared of even digging in at that granular level, especially a lot of the clients I work with tend to be creatives and visionaries. So they're really 20,000 foot thinkers that just don't want to be scrambling around the weeds trying to pull out the numbers. So if you were that kind of person, would you say that the best thing to do then is to just outsource that whole data analytics, looking at all the numbers to somebody else? Or would you say it's important as the expert or the influencer to have a really tight grip on all that stuff yourself?
I think they should understand the basic numbers. And if they have the money to outsource the analytics and they can just be handed a report, then that's great. But it's kind of scary just to be out there and not really know how much money you have coming in that's really yours and how much really needs to go somewhere else.
I'm a total control freak, so I couldn't I couldn't hack not knowing. And I also nerd out on going into the analytics bit. So I kind of can't understand when people don't want to, because I personally feel like you're operating blind, and that would really terrify me.
Yeah, it's like that. You know, I'm kind of different, as in I don't like doing the numbers work, but I want to know the numbers. Mm. So I would be more of the person to outsource that to someone else, give me a report once a week or once a month. And then I can make educated decisions on how many Facebook ads can I buy? At what point do I need to turn those Facebook ads off, or whatever method of advertising you're using?
So as well as being a funnel magician, you also write conversion copy using a method you call primal persuasion, which sounds exciting just from the title. Can you walk us through how primal persuasion works, and what is the impact when you apply it to your copy?
So primal persuasion is an idea that I got from watching a lecture from a man named Paris Lampropoulos. And Paris was talking about how to dig deep into your market psychology, how to basically uncover the need behind the need so you can really target stories that resonate with your market. So I started digging into this concept that Paris talked about in a book called Reinventing Your Life, and it was written by Dr. Young and Dr. Klosko. And their research was all about relationships. They were psychologists to help people with relationships. And they started noticing there were just certain people that would come in that would keep falling for these same problems over and over again. They desperately wanted to be loved, but they kept only being attracted to people who were emotionally unavailable. And they called this a life trap. You're just continually doing the same thing over and over again, even though you probably even know you're doing it, but you can't stop. And they got to digging into this, and they found this research on what was called schemas. A schema is basically a coping mechanism we develop as children when we face, they use the word tragedy, but I think that really it's just adversity. And every child kind of faces those things different and develop coping mechanisms. For example, let's say you have parents that are hypercritical. A child will develop a coping mechanism to really start blaming themselves and try harder and harder and harder. So they impress their parents, right? They will develop these coping mechanisms that kind of turn into this schema of unrelenting standards. And these schemas really protect a kid and their psyche because, you know, a child is not very highly developed. They don't see the world in the big picture. They see the little picture. So they develop these coping mechanisms. But we never let go of those coping mechanisms. We keep using them in life, even when they don't serve us anymore. So when you start looking at your market, you can start finding these schemas in your market where certain things really resonate, and you can tell stories to those life traps and schemas.
This episode is brought to you in partnership with ActiveCampaign. If you've been listening to the show for some time, you'll know how obsessed I am with email marketing. It's why I'm a huge fan of ActiveCampaign. It's an email marketing platform that lets you create email automations without getting tangled up in confusing if-then process flows. It uses a super intuitive visual system so you can seamlessly build email campaigns in minutes. Just map out your flow, drop in your copy, and you're good to go. If you're looking for email marketing software that's so simple your grandma could use it, make sure you check out ActiveCampaign. Head over to wordistry.co.uk/partners. And click on the button marked Check Out ActiveCampaign Now. How would you go about identifying what the main schema is that's influencing that particular market? So from my perspective, like taking this, looking at it from the outside in, I would sort of say, well, surely your market is a group of people, and the core emotional driver or the schema underneath their behavior is going to be very dependent on the individual. Would you say that when a person presents with a problem, that they all tend to be driven by the same underlying fear within an entire market? Or would this be a case of looking at your avatar and then saying, well, I'm only going to talk to this one individual, and it's going to draw in all the people that are dealing with this particular schema?
I think what you'll find, you're very right. Humans are very complicated. A human in general is very complicated. I myself, as I started learning about these schemas, you know, I start going, oh, that's me. That's me. Oh, that one's me too. So you're, the average person is going to have a mix of these schemas. And when I talk about these schemas, I tend to talk about it like the psychologists do, on a very yes or no kind of sounding way, and like the worst case possible scenario. But the fact is, a schema will run from 1 to 10, right? So I suffer a little bit from this unrelenting standard schema. So I showed up to this podcast with a book of notes, all my slides and everything, hoping that I was going to be able to refer to them and not mess up at all, right? But that is really nothing compared to someone who is like on a level 10. You know, they can't relax. They can't let go. They probably would never even do the podcast necessarily without practicing and paying someone to come in and coach them. You know what I'm saying? When you look at your market, you're going to find a mix of schemas for sure. But when you really start digging in and looking at your avatar close, you're probably going to find, yeah, there's a mix of everything in here, but, you know, abandonment schema, deprivation, social exclusion, those are all three types of schemas. Those are really big players in my market. So what story should I be telling that really brings in all those three or two or five? You're going to have to do the research. Unfortunately, okay, Primal persuasion is not necessarily a magic bullet. It's just a way to really refine your avatar and your research that you've already done, your market research that you've already accomplished.
But definitely, I can absolutely see how it would have a huge impact on the power of your copy, because a lot of what people put out into the world is very surface level. And yes, you're talking to a problem, but it's just the way that the problem's presenting itself on the surface. And so it has much more impact if you can really drill down into what's going on underneath. So could you walk our audience through each of the primal persuasion schema and explain the best ways to leverage each one?
Sure, I can. There's 11 of them.
Okay, so why don't you choose your favorite three, and then you can explain the best ways to leverage those.
Okay, I have a couple for sure that are important, and you'll see why here in a second. The first one is the defectiveness schema. And the basic concept of the defectiveness schema is, the quote would be, I'm not lovable. When you're looking at your market for that one, you're looking for anyone who feels like they're just fundamentally unlovable. And as I tell you these questions, you're going to see why you really, it's not, when you look at your avatars, it can't be a surface level look. You have to really be able to get in their heads. And that comes from really doing the work and doing the research and even talking to people in your market.
It's funny, actually, that's my favorite part of the process, is getting on the phone with people. And often when I speak to clients and I say to them, would you mind if you get me the phone numbers of some of your buyers, they kind of look at me like, oh my God, you actually want to talk to people? Yes, yeah, right? I really enjoy it.
That's great. I'm going to have to hire you to do that for me.
I think I'm just really nosy.
That's awesome. All right. You're going to do what you just did, and you're going to get on the phone, and you're going to really understand them, and you're going to think about their answers. And for the defectiveness schema, they feel unworthy of love, and they're afraid to love so much that it's difficult to believe that people close to them value them or love them back, and they expect to be rejected.
Would you say this schema is more likely to appear in the relationship niche over others, or can this schema present itself in different ways in all sorts of other niches? Because listening to what you're saying, the first thing that screams to me is that it's going to be really related to the dating niche. But does it apply across the board?
That's the interesting thing about this one, because even in Paris, when I learned this from Paris Lampropoulos, his quote was, everything we sell is about defectiveness. I've actually got a list here of things you can ask that probably go more into the marketing, but I see where what I'm saying would lead you to believe that it's more of a dating niche problem. But almost everyone suffers from this defectiveness schema on some level. And it's really the basis of copywriting in general. Because when you start looking at the stories that work for this, it's the standard problem, agitation, solution. You know, you make them feel like they're kind of failing, and verify what they already think, because they feel like they're defective. And then you throw them a rope and give them salvation. And that's really kind of a lot of copywriting right there, and selling a lot of products.
It kind of sounds evil when you put it that way.
Well, I mean, you know, this could be used for good or evil. I think that it's for good, because if you've got a good product you need to get into someone's hands, they're going to fight you to give you their money, even if they need it.
It's true. So. And I remember I read Cialdini's book. He said that everything that he'd put into the book that came with a caveat that it could be used for good and for evil, but he really hoped that only people who wanted to do good in the world would actually take his lessons and apply them to their life. So, I mean, I guess the same is true with sales. You can use all of this stuff to sell terrible products and to rip people off. But you hope that whatever you're writing copy for is not one of those products.
Hopefully that you're picking products not to. But I also hope that my copy is so much better than the bad people, and I'm selling the good product, you know, that it's almost my responsibility to be as good at persuasion as possible, to do good. I know that's kind of a crazy way to wrap it around and convince myself, maybe, but.
No, I totally agree. I actually, when I first started out, I had an experience with a kind of snake oil guru, and it really shaped my attitude to the people that I want to work with as well. I see so many people, and you will as well, like all these gurus that actually don't have anything of any value to teach, but because they've built a big Instagram following or wherever they're up displaying their influence, and they're just taking people money, selling an impossible dream, and they know it. And so I'm pretty careful about vetting the people that I work with to make sure that I'm not helping those types of people take money off their clients, because I don't think it's fair.
Yeah, it always reminds me of this story. When I was little, I stayed at my grandma's a lot, and I saw this thing on TV, and oh my God, it looked like the greatest thing ever. You're putting sequins on clothes or whatever. I don't know. It's this little punch tool. And it looked like the greatest thing ever. And my grandma bought it. I waited my 6 weeks to get it, because, you know, you used to have to wait for things, right? and it came, and it was just this crappy piece of plastic that wouldn't do anything.
Oh no.
And I think back on that, and I was super disappointed, but I think about my grandma who worked hard in a factory for her money, and how that money was just wasted. And I don't ever want to be selling products like that.
Yeah. God, your poor grandma. It's terrible, isn't it? And my children, they watch all these, and the adverts on TV for children's toys in particular, like they know exactly what they're doing, and they know that the toys that they're selling are a load of junk. And so I don't actually let my children watch adverts on TV, even though they're like, but mummy, you do this for a living. You write adverts. Why can't we watch adverts? Because your little brains are too small to process the information. So do you want to move on to the second schema?
Oh, yeah. So the second, let's go back to that unrelenting standard schema, because I think this will come in a little bit better for the marketing aspect of this. The unrelenting standard schema, basically, they never feel like they're good enough. They place excessive emphasis on status and money, achievement, beauty, order, recognition, and they will sacrifice all their happiness, health, and sense of accomplishment for those things, even their relationships. The other neat thing about that, not neat necessarily, but the interesting thing about it is they also become very judgmental and rigid in their standards for other people. The things you can ask them or things you can think about when you're looking at this avatar is, do they think they have to be the best? Do they feel like they're never good enough? Do they need to maintain perfect order, look good at all times? Maybe they don't have any time to relax or maintain personal relationships. They feel like they deserve strong criticism, and they have no problem giving other people strong criticism as well. And wealth and status is very important. So you'll find that, you know, in a lot of markets, but it shows up a lot in health and beauty, finance, the pickup world. You get that feeling of keeping up with the Joneses. And why this one is interesting is because unrelenting standard schema is the key to your back-end sales. Think about you have a fitness product. One group of people who want that, let's say it's a, we can go a lot of different directions with a fitness product, right? But let's say we want to address this unrelenting standard schema. First of all, it's not going to be good enough to, hey, let's lose 10 pounds and feel better about ourselves, right? We want to be the CrossFit world champion with this fitness product in order to do this unrelenting standard. They want to be the best ever world CrossFit champion. So your upsell is going to be, you know, the 10 techniques, the best, yeah, I don't know, I'm just making it up right now. the 10 techniques that the world champion CrossFit people do every year, and how you can beat them at their own game. That's your upsell.
I could see how gamifying would really appeal to this group of people as well, having some kind of leaderboard or something so that people can publicly display the fact that they've kicked each other's butts.
I like that. Let's get to work on this product.
It's probably because this would totally appeal to me. I think if my husband listens to this, he'll be screaming in the background going, oh my God, that's my wife.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, but we all do. We may not be a number 10 on that unrelenting standard, but we like getting the pat on the back, the good job, right? Most of us are like, great, let me lose that 10 pounds, but I also want that 6-pack abs. So you put that 6-pack ab on the upsell, even if it's not some type A level 10 unrelenting standards person, it's still what drives your upsells, no matter who you're talking to.
It's fascinating, actually, that you can use this not just for the messaging side of things, but actually for the product creation side of things as well. Do you want to move on to the third one?
Yeah, we can use the same example. Let's talk about now the same exercise program, but maybe a new mom who wants to lose weight, right? Now then, again, people get so sensitive nowadays, and I'm getting ready to use words that would be considered maybe bad. So I'm not calling anyone a martyr.
If we have any snowflakes listening, close your ears.
So let's say we have a new mom. And I think that a lot of women fall into this subjugation schema. And the subjugation schema is about kind of being a martyr. It's kind of like taking care of everyone else and not taking care of yourself. I think martyr may be the word that sets people off, but it's really about feeling like you have to take care of everyone else first. Basically, they sacrifice their own needs and desires for the sake of others. It's very common in the parent market, the pet market, religion. And family type products, like buy something for your family. Which cereal are you going to buy? Which, you know, the cereal company is telling you that, oh, well, if you're a good mom, you don't want this sugary cereal, right? Or if you're a good mom, you want this fun pink cereal over here that's full of sugar. So you've got this fitness product and you want to sell it to the new mom. You want to recognize their guilt. You know, you want to recognize that, well, we know you just had this baby and you feel bad about taking care of yourself, but you know, you got to flip that. But if you're not taking care of yourself and you're not healthy, how are you going to take care of your baby? Which is also guilt, by the way. And then you want to add empathy, you know, oh man, we understand how hard it is, but with just 10 minutes a day, we can completely change your life and you can be feeling good and taking care of your family and, you know, see how the story changes versus the unrelenting standard story. And the type of product you're trying to sell.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I could probably talk about this for the next 12 hours, but I don't know if anybody else would want to listen. So at this point, we need to look to wrap up. So I'd love it if you could share one small action step that the audience can take away and implement right after the show. Is there a single piece of homework you could recommend that's going to help people boost their conversions or fix their leaky funnels?
Let's see. So if you've got a funnel where the front end product is selling, but you're not selling a lot of the upsell or the back end product, really dig into that. Start thinking, is this a good product? And if it is, what do I need to change on the copy to make it sell? Or do I need to change the product? The best way to do that is start talking to people who bought your product. Find out why they didn't take the upsell. The other thing, if you just don't know where you're losing people, get someone on Fiverr to help you out or Upwork and get the analytics on your funnel, get the Facebook pixels on your funnel, have someone show you and help you find out where you're losing people. You can also download like free products like Hotjar that will show you heat maps of where your customers are going on your funnel, and you can see where they're leaving your funnel. Those are all great things you can do. But if you can just really get to know your avatars and find out why they're making their decisions, then you're naturally going to start writing better copy.
And definitely more people need to get their prospect and their buyers on the phone, because what I find is if you ask a really simple question and then just shut up, then people like to fill the holes with with words,
right?
And they'll just tell you stuff and it's amazing. And some of the stuff that comes out of those conversations, you just think, wow, I don't know if I would tell a stranger that stuff, but people do.
Yeah.
So now that you've shared all that amazing insight, can you tell us where is the best place for people to go to get on your list so that they can be the first ones to grab your Primal Persuasion ebook?
You can find me at funnelcopyexperts.com. And by the time this goes out, the book is probably up. If not, just sign up for the list and I will get it out to you, talking about persuasion and copy every week.
Thank you so much to Jodi for sharing those fascinating insights into marketing funnels and primal persuasion. If you enjoyed what you heard on today's episode, I'd love it if you could leave me a review on your favorite podcast platform. It helps boost this show in the podcast rankings so more people get to benefit from what me and my guests have to share about direct response marketing. I truly appreciate every minute of your time and attention. Thank you for listening and see you next time on the Conversion Choreography Show.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Conversion Choreography Show. If you did, then make sure you hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode on your favourite device. You can also subscribe to receive email updates direct to your inbox if you head over to my website at www.wordistry.co.uk.